So good afternoon, work. Welcome to the Urban Forestry Board. Monday, March 11th, 2024, 3 o'clock. We will do roll call.
Chair Burke?
Here.
Vice Chair Kohler?
Here.
Board Member McChristensen?
Here.
And Board Member Pellerin?
Here.
Mr. Chair, we have quorum.
Thank you again for everybody being here. Moving on to number two, approval of minutes for February 12th, 2024.
I just have two little typos on page two in A, Chair Burke, at the bottom of the part A, chair is misspelled. And on page four, the last page, my name has another ER on it. Near the top.
Thank you.
Would like someone like to make a motion to approve the minutes?
I move that we approve the regular meeting minutes from Monday, February 12th, 2024.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
On to visitor communication. We have a few people here in the room. I believe we have someone that signed up to speak. Who would that be?
First is Monica Thomasy.
Yeah, you'd like to come on up and give a few minutes here.
Hi, I'm Monica Thomasy. I'm at 527 South Fir Street. And I have been meaning to come here for a very long time, but I've been very busy. And the reason I wanted to talk to you guys is I'm concerned about the code being 20 years old. And when I looked at it, it looked very skimpy and kind of outdated. And I just want to encourage you to look at other city codes that are towns about our size or maybe a little bigger and look at updating the code just in general. I'm concerned about the, you know, how the trees and the forest are valued or not valued here and how they're managed just in general, just overall. It's time to update it. A lot has happened in the last 20 years and, you know, not just concerns about climate change and water, but we have, you know, increasing population, increasing development pressure, and just some, you know, basic things like that you can address one at a time, like, you know, somebody cutting down a tree they weren't supposed to and paying a $500 fine, which is absurd when they can get thousands of dollars for the timber. You can do it one at a time, but I recommend just like redoing the whole code. And I looked up a couple towns that I thought were more progressive. One is Hood River and one is Ashland. And I'd recommend, which I did look up and printed that off and left it at home. But you can find, if you can't find it, let me know. But just go to the Hood River and Ashland and look up some other towns too and see their codes were recently updated. And ours is, like I said, 20 years old. So I think it's time for a review and enhancement given, you know, changes that have come upon the town or the town has brought upon itself. That's it. Thank you.
Just one quick follow up. What specific code are you talking about? Building code, our Urban Forestry Board recommendations?
Municipal code.
is where the Urban Forestry Board falls under. Private trees fall under the development code, which is not in their purview.
Okay. Looks at the forest, not just the trees, you know, looks at the landscape. So maybe a bigger change. It's just maybe that's
Avery, can you hear that?
I can't hear anything. I'm okay. Trying.
To the municipal code for what we follow versus the building code as a whole in general. So
I'm Gary Ross on the city council. We've had some discussion around this. It's early in those stages, but I think that there's a good degree of interest on the part of all of us to look at whether what we can and can't do to address the urban forest, the entire canopy of the city. As I said, this board's purview is realistically looking at trees that are in the city right away that the city owns. That's what it does. When you start to get into the private property rights, there's some other little more complex things going on, but I can assure you that it's something that I think we will be looking at. How quickly? Nothing happens fast when you start talking about code, unfortunately. But I know we've had discussions about it, and Councillor Cobb is sitting up in front of you, and I think she could probably also clarify that. I think I'm right, am I not? Yes. So we started that series of discussions, and we really, from a council perspective, I thank you for bringing it to us, and probably a letter to the council of the many things that you spoke about would be appropriate. And I would do it in a letter because we all get it in our packet, we can all read it ahead of time. It's a little more, you can come speak, but it's more effective than when you come and speak in front of us. And then I'm going to get off because this is their meeting.
Could I add one thing to that?
Yeah.
I just think it's fantastic that we have community interest and that the feelings of the community should ideally guide the direction that we take with urban forestry policy. And so if we have community members interested in coordinating that kind of effort, that would also be really cool.
Chair, we have another individual for visitor communication, Susan Cobb.
Okay.
Hi, I'm here as a citizen rather than a counselor. Susan Cobb, 149 North Maple Lane. I have a very large, beautiful ponderosa pine. And in the course of our goals as counselor, we thought we would look at significant heritage trees. And coincidentally, I'm hoping that I have a heritage tree to test the process. There evidently already is a process for heritage trees that has not been tested for individuals identifying a tree that they might want to. So whether or not my tree ends up being a heritage tree, I just offered it as a test. And I gave the council Urban Forestry Board a letter of introduction and some pictures that Teresa kindly helped me with. And hopefully you'll have a chance to look at that and think about maybe working on the process. And whether it's successful or not, at least we'll know, as far as my tree being heritage, we'll know, you know, how it works and get out any kinks. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Susan.
Yeah, thank you for that. I know that's one of the topics that we're going to be discussing today is working through that heritage tree process and kind of learning about it and seeing what we can do. So I think that sums it up for visitor communication. Yep. Going down to board business. A, Dan, I think, signed in here. He's with us. Yep. Consideration of recommendation to remove leaning 19-inch ponderosa pine in the Creekside campground. Dan, you have any input on that?
Yes, the tree has significant lean. During inventories and past walkthroughs with the park, that tree has increasing lean. I've checked the soil conditions around there. I think, the soil obviously is soft during the wintertime. And a lot of the surrounding trees do have a lean because of the prevailing winds, but this one is really tweaked out and more drastic than any other surrounding tree, and more drastic than any other past walkthroughs. So I suggest removing that tree. And if it was anywhere else, maybe we could give it a chance, but since it's in the park, it leans right into the parking areas and the sites themselves. This tree should go away. One good thing, there's many surrounding trees as far as the tree scape or that tree line. Other trees will fill in. I don't think you'll notice a difference with this particular tree missing. So my final recommendation is to remove it. It is a little frustrating. It's perfectly green, but the lean is a strong consideration.
This is Cheryl. I just have a question. Any idea why one tree would lean when the ones around it aren't leaning? Is it searching for sunlight? Is it?
Well, all the surrounding trees do have a lean because of the prevailing wind, but this particular spot, I think, is a soil condition. It's just the soft soil. And also, it might have been predisposition with some snow and ice, and this one is just kind of thin from the herd, so to speak, and it's leaning more than the others, and I think it should come down.
Thank you.
Trish, you have any input?
Well, I hate to see a tree come down that's healthy, but it sounds like it's a safety issue. And so I'm okay with getting it removed.
Avery?
Yeah, I think that makes sense to me considering the location. It's probably a little bit more risk than we want to maintain.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think if it wasn't in the park, I would let it go, but it just doesn't look like a good tree to people who are staying there. So, would like to make a motion to eliminate that tree?
I move that we follow Dan's recommendation to remove the leaning 18-inch ponderosa pine in Creekside Campground.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chair, the motion passes.
So on to Board Business B, review a request for a proposal for City Forester. Paul, you want to tackle this one?
Yeah, so if you guys have not heard, we are losing our City Forester of the last almost 10 years to a employment opportunity down in the Roseburg area. So with that, we are going to go out for City Forester services using a request for proposal procurement method. And so we put together the RFP for you guys to consider and provide us comments on. And then we'll work with Dan to get that out in front of as many qualified people as we can, preferably in the area. To reduce travel time and travel expenses. But it will be open to anyone anywhere. So, and then with that, I want to make a couple slight adjustments on the schedule. moving the proposal evaluation up to the week of the 5th, as well as any interviews, and that way we can bring a recommendation to the board on Monday the 8th. And then we would also like to have a representative from the board be on the interview or the proposal evaluation team.
So, and that's the week of the
week of the 5th.
I will be unavailable that week if someone else is available.
The week of the 5th of April?
Yeah.
That's a Friday, isn't it?
That's yeah. Friday. We'd be looking at like either Thursday or Friday, 4th or 5th.
I'm out of town, fortunately.
I think I would really enjoy participating if nobody else is interested or has availability.
I think it would be great if you did it, Avery, since you have direct experience being a professional forester. If you can do it.
Yeah, I think that'd be a good person to sit on.
Okay, great. Any other feedback as far as the RFP?
Paul, how is the RFP communicated out?
We will obviously put it on our website. We have a list of certified arborists that we'll send it to in Central Oregon.
Okay.
We'll also advertise it on the Plan Center in Bend, where we advertise everything. And then I don't know if we'll look to see if we're going to put an advertisement in the bulletin or not.
Okay.
Paul, I had one comment on the RFP. I noticed that it was going to be open to certified foresters and municipal arborists, and I just thought maybe open it up to ASCA registered consulting arborists might also be a good idea. I know there's quite a few people out there with that qualification that I think stands up to or exceeds the others as well.
Yeah, I think we wanted to keep it to more of a consulting type firm versus a tree removal type firm that has a lot of those tree removal firms have the certified arborists in their team. And we just look at that as a complete conflict of interest.
Oh, I think maybe I didn't explain it well, but I was recommending registered consulting arborists, not just an ISA certified arborist, but a registered consulting arborist, which is a certification through the American Society of Consulting Arborists. And so they have their own qualification that I think maybe that makes more sense.
And then who is that through?
They call it ASCA, so the American Society of Consulting Arborists. And they have a specific qualification called the RCA, the Registered Consulting Arborist. And it's one of the highest level certifications you can get in the field.
Okay.
Do they have a local presence somewhere in Bend or on this side of the mountains?
There are multiple registered consulting arborists in the area, I think, yeah.
We'd like the certified municipal specialist. Makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
I agree.
As well as certified forester, I think that's another skill set with the tracts of forest that the city owns that is more than just an urban forest. It's an actual forest that we have to manage more of on the commercial scale.
Does anybody have any other questions about the RFP?
Great.
Cool. On to heritage trees. Teresa, you want to?
Sure. So if you look, In your packet, I'll be generally following a cover sheet I put in there. The first thing that we included, Avery and I worked on this together, is background on just what the code currently says about heritage trees. And we've talked about this a little bit, but it's out of the regulation of city parks and public property. For sisters, Ponderosa pines are given preference, but generally the criteria is the tree age should be approximately 200 years or more, and the tree size should be approximately 30 inches DBH diameter at breast height or greater, and or more than 85 feet tall. And then trees that aren't Ponderosa pines, the Urban Forestry Board is to consider each tree on a case-by-case basis. Once we as a board agree on trees to submit, then the list is sent to the City Council. There's a lot more in here that's detailed. One thing I'll bring up is that there is reference to a form. For example, if Susan Cobb wanted to follow exactly the wording here, there would be a form for her to fill out. In her letter, which is included in this packet, she's very specifically addressed issues that might be on a form. But that's something for us to discuss and for Paul to give us input on, as far as do we need that really and by when. And then there's some pages that Dan had originally provided to us last summer on the aging of Ponderosa pines and the different characteristics of bark as they get older. The plates get bigger, the color changes. You probably have heard of Ponderosa pines referred to as yellow bellies, and that's partly because the color of their wood and the outside of the tree as they get very, very old and very big. Any questions or comments on the code part at this point? And then we also included this pamphlet called Saving Our Heritage Trees, which is really a great read to explain just an overall view of why we would name a heritage tree. I mean, one of the reasons is not only to bring attention to the general public of the beauty and value of these trees that goes beyond our generations here, but also it helps protect them either from development or insect infestation or anything that might happen if they aren't cared for optimally. So when we were going around Creekside Campground looking at trees recently, Avery and I, seems to me that several of those trees look like they're stressed. And I don't know if that's pretty new or if it's something that's gradually happening to them because of the climate change or because they get too much water or not enough water. And then we've been hearing in this board of trees that we have to cut down, seems at a regular clip, at places like East Portal on the city streets. And once they're gone, they're gone. And so saving heritage trees is, in my mind, part of our job to do what we can to save the best ones for future generations. So then if you keep going, the first tree that's mentioned is Susan Cobb's, and this is her letter, which is on top of it. So basically she's explaining, and Avery, jump in if you want to add anything to any of this. She's explaining that she bought her property, which is on North Maple Lane, partly because she loved this tree so much, which she has named Heath after her father, who passed away. And she bought the house new, but it had just been built, and they preserved this tree, which was the only Ponderosa tree on that property. that area, she said, is called Edge of the Pines. And if you look up and look around, and it's, yeah, the pines get thinner and thinner as you go toward her house from the center of town. She has maintained it very well. She's had an arborist come out and prune it a couple of times. It looks really healthy. If you look at that tree and then some of the ones that were in Creekside, boy, this one is just looks like it's thriving. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's really benefiting from the care that she's given it, or maybe because it has absolutely no competition there, or some of those things. So she ends her letter by saying, when the applicable form is made available, I will file the instrument with the city requesting heritage status and accept that I will be subject to the city's related regulations, which will also bind all successors, heirs, and assigns. So that's one thing when you're a private landowner you need to consider, is if you say, I would like my tree to be a heritage tree, it's something that you do not just for your own self and your lifetime, but it stays with the property and the tree. So now, notwithstanding that, there's language in our code that talks about how you might get a tree removed from heritage status, but generally you're signing up to do that beyond your time on this earth, and Susan embraces that idea and is aware of it, but not everybody might want to do that. And for example, if I were to go buy a tree that's on private property, like the Cottonwood Cafe tree, and I wanted to nominate that tree for heritage tree status, then I could do that, or Gary could do it, any of us could do it. But the property owner would have to sign an affidavit that they were aware and agree to all these terms. So then if you look at the picture, you'll see that it has been limbed up, like almost above the roof line there. And she took care when she had it landscaped to give some way for water to drip down to the roots. But there is also an asphalt driveway right next to it, which is something to consider, I think. So next steps for that tree would be, I believe, to have Dan assess or bless that it appears to be more than 200 years old, because it is the correct diameter, but it's not, but it's 73 feet tall. So not as tall as it could be. And the bark plates are from 2 inches to 8 inches. Any comments on that tree? Okay, move along. Then we chose six trees. We decided to go with trees at Creekside Park and Creekside Campground to really go forth to the city and present, because we're having Arbor Day at the end of the month. And if we could get them approved by the city council before Arbor Day, then that would be something to share with the community at Arbor Day, and to possibly have at least a handout that people could self-tour the trees right there on Arbor Day. And or we could have a couple of us ready to take around a little group and show them the trees and talk about it. And also in conjunction with Arbor Day and announcing that, we could announce to the city and everybody that, hey, we're doing this and we'd like your input on heritage trees. Do you have one? Do you see one on a city street or at a city park that you think might be a candidate? And get people to send in their ideas and be more aware that this process is going on, rather than us doing it over here on the side. So if you go through your packet, there's six trees nominated, and I'll go through them really quickly. The first one is right when you get to the parking lot by the footbridge over Whiteches Creek. And there's a sign there, you can see it in one of the pictures. It says Creekside City Park. You look right down that path toward the footbridge, and there's a very big, beautiful pine there. It's 57 inches diameter and 135 feet tall. And so that's a really easy one to spot and to appreciate. You don't even have to get out of your car. Second one that's listed is very near Highway 20 and very tall and leaning slightly. If you know where the way station is on Highway 20, and then there's a low steel safety railing, it's right near the edge of that railing before the way station. So now that you know this, you can easily spot it from Highway 20 if you're looking. However, Jackson tells me that actually this tree belongs to Oregon. So we do not have probably the right to call it a heritage tree as the City of Sisters. Avery has mentioned that there's a way to do a heritage tree nomination with the state. We might be able to at least explore that possibility for this tree. But you know, it's really near the highway and it's right by that path too. And it looks like it's struggling a little bit, but it's still a beautiful tree. The third tree is pretty much right across the pedestrian path from that one. It's got a very obvious lightning strike or something that caused a really prominent vertical rupture in the trunk. It's 42 inches diameter, 117 feet tall. And very striking. Next tree, tree four, is by campsite 64. There's kind of an odd little slope at the campground there, and it's kind of sitting on the side of the slope. It's really a gorgeous tree. Also, it meets the criteria, 45 inches diameter, 105 feet tall. And then there's one at next page, nomination number five. There is one at campsite number one by a big rock. And curious about this one is that its diameter, 33.75 inches versus its height. It's very tall for its diameter compared to others in the park. So maybe, I mean, I don't know the reason why, but it is very distinctive in that way. The final one here, nomination number six. We chose this one because it has a very distinctive fork. It's right by the playground there. And if you know where the tree that's a, it's a dead bull that they kept in the campground. We've talked about this before, it's a wildlife place. It's very near that tree. Anyway, it's a really pretty tree also. Well, that's it for the nominations, possible nominations. And let's see here. There's upcoming city council meetings, March 13th, March 27th, April 10th, April 24th. So my hope is that we could get a list, so we'd have to take one of these trees off, but perhaps five trees at Creekside and Susan's tree, and do whatever needs to be done to bless them as candidates, and then send the list to City Council ASAP. Our next Urban Forestry Board meeting is April 8th. So let's open it for discussion and feedback from you guys. And Avery, do you have anything to add?
You reminded me when you were talking about the tree with the lightning strike. I just was wondering if Dan had noticed those. There was two trees that looked like in there in Creekside Campground that seemed to have that kind of a lightning strike signature markings. And I just wondered if maybe he's been through and noticed that and would agree that that's what that was from. I was surprised to see two trees kind of close to each other with a similar markings like that.
Yeah, sometimes the lightning strike is more of a spiral, but in the inventory, The defects are listed sometimes as a note, so more details could be gleaned out of the inventory if there's an actual note on each individual tree. But whenever you see a vertical, big, long streak like that, it could be lightning and also could be frost crack. But frost crack is usually in true firs, but I bet it's lightning.
Cool, thanks.
Just a quick comment. The council agenda for Wednesday night is already set, so it would be very difficult to bring that before council this week.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you know, sure. As you're doing your planning and whatever recommendation this group meets, I'm thinking that
we'd bring it to the forestry board before council.
That's what I was going to say.
After April 8th.
Yes, yeah, what I was going to say. I was going to ask Paul that very question. I think it would come back to this group, and then it would go to council. So in terms of your planning, sometimes I get frustrated with the speed up, slow down, but that's the process that we work with. And as the advisor group, we would come back to you folks anyway to bless it at, once we have the information on those trees. So, but anyway, I know I just want to be sure you knew that the agenda for this meeting, unless somebody would come and speak to it in the public session, there's no real other way to get it on the agenda at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have to check with the future council agendas. It's pretty packed. We're in the middle of budget season. Got a lot of things going on. So, and truthfully, I don't know, you know, our city manager is going to have to talk to council to see if they actually want to workshop this.
That's what I was
thinking. Before they start nominating trees, just so that they're comfortable. So it could take a while. Yeah.
Yep. I didn't want to speak out of place, but that's exactly the thought I had, Paul.
I definitely support the idea of the Heritage Tree Program. I think that's great. I appreciate the time Teresa and Avery put into going out there and looking for some of these beauties. I definitely see the need for a process, as you were talking about the form, kind of a little bit of a workflow. How would this work versus the private versus a public tree nomination? And maybe we can document that and the criteria that needs to be met and put it on something that could be put out to the public so they could just fill that out. And as we said, using Susan Cobb's tree letter here kind of guides us towards what this form needs to have. For example, it's going to have the estimated height and the DBH and so forth, the location, like you guys put for your nominations here. And I guess one of the questions I would have in just thinking about this process, are we going to require some official arborist or our city forester to go out there and determine the height and the diameter and so forth for a private tree? Or are we asking the property owner to invest in having that done and having some kind of letter from an arborist? So these are some of the, what I call the workflow or process questions we probably need to ask ourselves so we can document how this would work before we present it to city council, because that'll probably be the questions they have. Well, how is this all gonna work? We don't want nominations coming in from left and right. We'll just have a nice funnel of a clear process. And I think we can work on that together and define that.
And frankly, that's why Paul mentioned workshop. That's the sort of a thing that as stuff like this starts to meld together, we oftentimes do a workshop. It's less formal. It's a lot easier for us to have open discussion. There are no motions involved. There are no decisions made. And it's really an opportunity. I mean, we've been talking about certain things. We're just looking at the packet. We've got something coming up Wednesday in our workshop that we've met. I mean, in our work, we've already had four workshops on the topic or five workshops on that very topic. This is sort of, we're almost done, what do you think time? And so this one isn't that complex, but the reality is that's where the staff gets to hear what counselors are thinking and where we can kind of freeform where it's not in an environment up there on that platform. And then that allows them, the professionals in the room, to go out and start to put together something that will realistically work within how the city works, and within the law, and within all the other things. And then that packet then comes back, and it will go through this group again too, before the council ever sees it. So I think that hoping to do it this Arbor Day is, I could tell you right now, I don't think it will, but I think a target for next Arbor Day, while it's a long way off, is, when is our, is it the 15th?
26.
26, yes. So I think that realistically, I like your idea. I don't want to, but I think realistically you're looking at, if you want an Arbor Day sort of thing, proclamation, you're looking at minimally a year from now. But again, I'm speaking out of turn. I just want you to know how that process works from my perspective as a counselor. And workshops are where we get 99% of the council's work done.
Mm-hmm. And it's been since 2021 that was really the last time council dove into the urban forestry tree code. It's, I believe, when the heritage tree work came through the process. So I think there's going to be a need to refresh. Got a new counselor on at that time. So I know there's been some private tree code that they've been working on, but the actual UFB stuff, I believe, was August of 2021, I think.
So what I'm hearing is people are recommending a very involved process with the community and possibly, probably a workshop. So my question is, I guess maybe for you, Paul, and you, Jackson, what could realistically be done if we wanted to do it as soon as possible? When could a workshop be scheduled realistically?
We'll have to look at the agenda calendar. I don't know. That's something that our city manager works with council on.
Okay.
So
who would
get back to you on that?
Who would be the appropriate party to develop this nomination process and approval process? Does that fall under us for public and we just have another box on the same form that says private? You know, is it something like that? Can we start with that and develop that process, or does it have to come out of the staff first? How's that work?
No, the code's pretty specific that it comes to you all, nominations, and then you make a recommendation to council. So that's the flow. And then they approve it. So
I was kind of wondering if, you know, listening to everybody's comments, if we couldn't use Arbor Day rather than as an opportunity to nominate specific trees, but maybe as a kickoff event for the discussions around heritage trees and workshops, and just kind of let the community know, hey, we're starting in on this process this Arbor Day and we're excited to move forward with it and hear from people and obviously work on it a lot more. But
I think that's a good idea. I would envision, hopefully at some point when we have this program in place and fully up and running, and that we could actually put something on our Explore Sisters website that's a heritage tree page, so tourists can come. They can have a map off of that website to find these heritage trees. City of Portland has a wonderful page dedicated just to their heritage trees throughout the city.
So we can work, Jackson and I can work on getting the nomination form, a draft prepped for your next meeting. We can put this on the agenda calendar if you'd like and start working through that. We'll dive a little bit deeper into the code to whether it's a flow chart or get the process kind of nailed down and simplified on how it works, that it's easily obtained and understood by the community at large. That makes sense.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks, okay. Paul.
You bet.
Any other discussion?
No, I like how it's going to get on the agenda for next month, and we'll just keep moving forward and doing what we got to do and
okay.
help with that. So thank you for all the work on that.
Sure.
And you too, Avery. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thank Teresa. She's done a lot of work. And Teresa, I'm sorry. And yeah, I really appreciate all the effort. It's a slow thing, but I think it's very valuable. So.
So finished up board business or on the other business, Arbor Day. Emily, would you like to, I'm sorry, Emmy?
Yeah. Hi, my name is Emmy Shoup. I'm the associate planner here with the City of Sisters. I work in the department I work in the community development department where we review private trees and those regulations for preservation of those trees and what guidelines we have for what makes private trees eligible for removal. But that's not what I'm here to talk about today. I'm here to talk about the Arbor Day event that we are working on hosting this year. I wanted to start by saying City of Sisters is a Tree City USA designated community. We've been designated since 2007. So we just got awarded our 17th year of being a Tree City. And what we have to do every year in order to maintain that designation is to have a tree board, such as the Urban Forestry Board. You guys help us maintain that designation. We have to have a community tree ordinance, which we have that, you know, includes that heritage tree code. And we have to at least spend $2 per capita on urban forestry, such as planting, maintenance, and maintenance might include pruning or removals. Last year we did, it looks like there was a hazard reduction removal project to kind of make sure the urban forest that we do have is safe. And last year we spent $26.80 per capita. So we went well above that minimum requirement. And we also have to celebrate Arbor Day every year. And part of that is having reciting the proclamation. The mayor does this every April. So I think this April, it's the second Wednesday of the month. And we'll also be having the Arbor Day event, which is intended to educate the community about the importance of our urban forest. So this year, with great help from Therese, as well as Rebecca Green, when she was on the Urban Forestry Board, we've been getting some great feedback and support and making this event better than previous years. I've been the one managing the Arbor Day event planning in previous years, and it's just been hard to kind of plug in with our community and make it something really engaging and fun. And so this year, what we're planning to do is host the event at Creekside Park. We've partnered with the Upper Deschutes Watershed Council to do kind of a riparian planting event along with, you know, trees that will be appropriate for Whitechoose Creek riparian area, as well as 100 ponderosa pine trees that Therese has helped sourced from, I think it's called the Ponderosa Project in Sun River. And so we're looking at maybe 200 trees, little seedlings, of course, being planted at Creekside Park on Friday, April 26. So you are all welcome to join if you're available and interested. We do have a local class of students that will be there. I think maybe 20 kids who will be getting in the dirt and having fun planting trees. It's always fun when you get to see little kids planting. I think it's a very fun event just to watch. Trying to see if there's anything else I missed. I think that's it. And I know Therese had mentioned maybe having like a little walkabout at Creekside Park to look at the trees that are being contemplated for nomination. You know, that's something that can still be done as part of the event. But primarily the focus will be that partnership with the Upper Deschutes Watershed Council. They're going to have a great little lecture about the history of Whitechoose Creek, their overall project along all of Whitechoose Creek and the different parts. So it'll be educational in that sense, as well as just trees in general. So any questions or comments?
Thanks, Emmy. Weren't we also going to give away some of those ponderosas?
I think we're going to try to save some to give away. Yeah. Maybe, you know, first come, first serve. Because sure. The priority is planting those trees. But if right. there's some left over, then, yeah, we'd be happy to send people home with some goodies and tree care instructions and a little bit of appreciation. But, yeah.
I suggest I bring a bunch of juniper seeds from my yard and we send them away with those. Paul, when's the campground open?
April 1st.
That's what I thought. Thank you.
That's a great question. Thanks. Anything else?
Last year, this was held at a different park. Is that correct?
Clemens.
Correct. Yeah, last year we held it at Cliff Clemens Park. We had maybe 10 kids there and, you know, board members helping out, and we planted 6 trees that were much more mature than what we'll be planting at Creekside Park. And, you know, it's been nice having the additional capacity with support from the Urban Forestry Board members to make this kind of a bit more special, because me just doing it by myself, I don't have a lot of capacity to make a great event. So this year we're doing a little bit more to make it better. And I think we've also been able to develop somewhat of a budget and a vision for what future Arbor Days could look like in the future.
Well, I'm really glad that we can work with Upper Deschutes Watershed Council. That's fabulous.
Yeah, seems like it'd be a fun day. Okay, thank you for your time.
Thank you for putting that together. Moving on to other board business, or I'm sorry, other business. 864 South Pine Street follow-up. Dan?
Yes, this is a follow-up from some of the right-of-way trees we approved for a new building project. The property and the landowner seemed cooperative and engaged. I was happy with the return call. He specifically asked how to handle stumps. The stumps that were taken, the trees that were taken out were cut very, very flush with the ground. And there's some construction and some soil movement, nothing too drastic. But my thought or my observation is that he doesn't have to do hardly anything in, as far as the stumps. The landscaping and soil and other activities will cover these up. They'll rot naturally. The landowner was concerned about, you know, possibly one rotten stump affecting a live tree that's next to it. Generally, there is a possibility of, you know, how roots sometimes meld together. Pines don't usually do that. Aspens do. But in this situation, I would not worry about that particular issue. There is one little small wedge poking up. I instructed the landowner to cut that remaining wedge off. And again, most of the stump is flush with the ground, with the exception of one little wedge poking up. Just make that last cut, and then I'm happy with the progress on that particular property in the right of way.
Excellent.
Thanks for that follow up.
Okay, I have a couple more follow ups with the new ODOT roundabout, and also some Portal Park observations. To start with, the ODOT tree protection is, I instructed ODOT staff and the people doing the construction, the proper tree protection methods. There's really no tree protection fence. There's a chain link fence encircling the construction site. There is one large ponderosa pine. I think they basically set up a virtual protection. That tree is really exposed to construction. I explained thoroughly, protect that tree. I took some pictures. I made some notes. My thoughts so far, they're respecting that tree protection. The work so far is low impact, you know, around the trees. the equipment they're using is appropriate, and there's no big gashing and gouging and tracking and mud and so on and so forth. One last observation, there is a bunch of material. I'm assuming they're going to remove it as soon as possible so they can continue to work. All the logs and boles of the tree, if it sits for more than a month, as we get into remainder of March and April, pine beetle will attack those trees or boles, that slash and the boles, the trunks that are laying there. Pine beetles will attack that. So I anticipate they will just remove it as soon as possible. But if it lingers for more than a month, we need to say something to them. I would like to see that removed. More observations about the portal park. There are two more old growth trees plus a medium aged tree. The tops are dying out. And this is an indicator of the Ips beetle. This is the type of beetle that hits the top bole of the tree. We talked about this several times throughout the whole city. You see that every so often. So these particular trees, most of the top is gone. I don't want to encourage insects in this park anymore. And also, there's going to be some slated construction and improvements and public use. Depending on how the plans are drawn up for infrastructure, I'm strongly considering these trees to be removed. I can make a full report if I see some more future plans, or we can use my professional opinion about the tree health. I just feel uncomfortable about the tops dying out and having this exposed to the public or why people are working on construction. So this is a something that should be addressed within 1 or 2 months. And I know there's some time frame with the future plans being made, but we should try and squeeze this in.
Do we need to take, or do we need to make a recommendation for those to be evaluated for, to put it on the agenda for next month?
I think they've already been evaluated, correct, Dan? You just want them removed?
Well, I made a quick assessment and some photos. My opinion, yes, I think it should be removed. We can use my professional opinion about this. If you are curious about the exact location and, you know, and personally, I want to see if there's any plans that have to be drawn up yet. I don't know. We could save, there's a smaller 19-inch medium-aged tree. Perhaps we could save that one. The two larger trees, the old growth trees, unfortunately, I would recommend being removed soon.
Are you able to generate a report so we can vote on it for our next meeting?
Yeah, I agree. I should I just want to bring this to attention quickly, you know, and however, yeah, I can assemble some a more thorough report. That way, maybe you could go out and look at the trees yourself, and they'll be identifiable.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
I think the least my question, Dan, is, are you worried about the Ips beetle not being removed now and it potentially affecting more trees if we leave it in another month?
Yes, the Ips beetle is all over town. We talked about these, but this portal park seems to be getting a lot of attention with the beetle. And yeah, that is a concern of mine and a feeling that, you know, I have no way to prove how much beetle is there, but this is a feeling, and the occurrence of this type of thing in that park is something that we should pay attention to.
Does this reach the threshold where we should try to vote on or make a recommendation, or do we want to do it based off of safety of other trees and the potential of it spreading?
Well, I'm up for, I think the opportunity for spreading is there. I'm a little bit on the fence of where the future construction is. I know that may or may not even be drawn up yet. That's what I'm asking. But as far as overall safety and then the spread of the bugs, that's a issue on the table now.
I'm wondering, sorry to interrupt you.
No, go for it, Avery.
I was just wondering, when are the Ips beetles, do we know when they're usually active or when they're usually, you know, going tree to tree or when they're in their larval stages and all that? Whether or not we're at a critical time right now or?
Yeah, this is a critical time right now. So mountain pine beetle and all its little subspecies or derivatives or whatever you want to call them, all the beetles are active in March and April and into May. So, yeah, we're approaching the time, you know, if they're in there now, they're going to wake up and do other things. So.
So from what I'm hearing is your recommendation is sooner rather than later and not wait for next month.
Yeah, I hate to be the bad guy, but yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Is there any opportunity to utilize, or does the city have any plan for wood utilization when we're looking at trees like that that probably have a lot of really valuable, you know, beautiful wood in them that could be utilized, or does most of that stuff just get chipped up in firewood?
Yeah, we're not in the sawmilling business, so it's just firewood is what we turn it into.
And that's for the park, correct?
Correct. What we can do is have Dan do an emergency report, get it in front of you all with a recommendation, and if we can get a at least a head nod over email to move ahead, that'd be great.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
After I saw the last two that were specifically designing roadways around, and they turned quick within the last 2 weeks. You can see them, just the tops turn. And there's two old growths not far away that did the same thing. It's horrible. I don't understand why. I mean, there's been no impact in that park. It's been virtually the same since it was created 25, 30 years ago.
Oh.
The Forest Service was painting them green when nobody was looking.
The Forest Service was so little on that piece of property that, you know, I mean, you could move a piece of brush and you did more than what they did.
Yeah,
but nothing's been done. Yeah, there hasn't been any compaction impacts. I mean, people walking through there, that's it. And they just seem to be dying.
Okay, Dan, well, we'll look forward to seeing that report, and then we'll reply via email, the board will, and hopefully we can get that down before we lose any others.
Yeah, the report will basically say what I've said, but I encourage you to, I'll produce a map. I encourage everyone to look at it and see if you're seeing the same things I'm seeing. And yeah, I agree with Paul. There's no impacts. The only people in there are maybe some homeless people hanging out sometimes, but nobody goes there. And I don't know why the bugs like it.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Are there any other board business anybody would like to speak to? Avery?
I actually did have one quick comment. I don't want to take a ton of time with this, but right across from the high school, and I don't know if that's Forest Service property. I need to kind of educate myself on how to identify the City of Sisters boundaries, but right across from the high school, there's a bunch of trees that look like maybe they had some chemical drift going on. I don't know if you guys have noticed that, but basically all the lower layers of dozens of pine trees are dying off. There's probably like two or three whorls up on most of them that have died off. And I thought, I wonder what happened there. And I wonder if that has anything to do with if any of that property is City of Sisters or if that's a Forest Service or if anybody is aware.
I'm pretty sure that's from the MAG, right? From when they sprayed years and years ago?
No, no. I think what he's talking about is where they did the controlled burn. Is that where you're thinking?
It's possible. It was snow on the ground, and I was wondering if somebody knew. Maybe there was some, yeah, controlled burn heated up those branches. I'm not sure.
That's, yeah, it's on 242 where they have the controlled burn. You lose that lower third of the needles.
I think, I'm pretty sure that was two or three years ago.
The control burn?
Yeah.
Was last year.
Last year?
Last year.
Yeah, and I remember there being a lot of, some of the folks in that area had a lot of negative comment about how far up looked like the burn when not really understanding what's going on. I think the trees are okay. It's just that there was quite a bit of heat for the burn, and it did affect those lower branches. You're talking about on the across from the high school on the other side of 242?
Correct, yeah. Yeah, but the needles are all still on there, but they've all gone brown.
Yeah, that was last year, so they haven't dropped yet.
Thank you.
Anybody have anything else?
I was wondering when Dan's leaving us. What date?
Well, there's no specific date. I'm actually in Elkton right now. But I will help with its transition. I'll still follow up with tree calls and reports and questions. But I can be contacted, but I'm physically in the Roseburg area right now as we sit.
Well, we appreciate all you've done over the years, Dan.
Oh, thank you.
You've been a great resource.
Enjoy the rain gear. You're gonna
look at me. Yeah, see.
Yeah. Elkton's a nice area though.
It is.
Yeah. I'm in wine country.
Yep. They don't need you for the wine area. They just need you to show up once in a while and see if it's any good.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if we don't have anything else, then meeting is adjourned at 4:08.
Yeah, it's just such a